questions. They have plagued humanity from the dawn of our ancestors to each of us breathing on this earth today. The only thing more important than answering what questions we can is keeping them a secret. Join me, a random average Joe, on a journey to uncover answers which ail us each in our own way. Such as, what came first, the fireplace or the house? It's an interesting question. Welcome to the Joe Van Secret Podcast. This is episode 25, nearing the end of season 1. With me today is guest 24. Guest 24, please say hello.
Hello.
Now, before we jump into things, I got some fun facts for you, me, and the audience. Yeah. So I'll start with the first one here. Millions of trees around the world grew because squirrels forgot where they buried their nuts. I don't know how factual that is, but just from a logical standpoint, so that is very interesting to think about. Another one I have here is 65% of Elvis impersonators are of Asian descent. It's just one of those curious things. I don't know, you know, something about Elvis really captured them as a person. Yeah. And the last one I have, the longest street in the world. Do you know this?
Is it Lakeshore?
No, close. It's actually Yonge Street in Toronto. It measures at 1,896 kilometers. And it goes straight up, literally just to, you know, almost the top of the province, which is insane because I never knew that. But longest street in the entire world, not just the country. So, you know, suck it, Russia. You may have the biggest country, but apparently you can't make roads all that long. Anyway, so on to the podcast. Thanks for joining me, first off.
Thanks for having me.
I'll start with a simple question. How was your day today?
It was good. I had the day off work. Awesome. So I lazed around and did literally nothing productive. I did some Christmas shopping, actually, so there's
that's
that.
That's productive, yeah.
But, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, most people I get normally haven't done anything, but it's because I always get them on their off day.
Yeah. You know,
it's just easier
schedule-wise.
It's just
most convenient for everyone.
Yeah. So what are the questions I have for you here? I'll throw this one at you. What do you do for work?
I work with plants.
Nice. Do you have a certain title? Or how many titles would there be?
At my job, I am the greenhouse and garden center assistant manager. So basically, someone comes in and they want a plant for their garden. And basically, I'll talk to them and I'll talk them through what kind of plants they are looking for, what kind of plants best suit the environment that they're going to be putting it into, what options they have. How to plant it, how to take care of it, all that kind of stuff. And then hopefully in the end, I make a sale and I sell a plant. As we shift into this Christmas Yuletide season, we kind of stop. Well, we still will sell plants, but everyone's in for the Christmas trees and the Christmas greens and all that fun stuff. So that's a generally good time of the year where you just kind of shift gears a little bit and you're more focused on selling the Christmas trees and stuff.
And where do you work? Because location, that's like one of the things that isn't really a secret on this thing. Everybody knows I'm from Burlington and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, it's up in Milton.
Oh, so your location is in Milton. That's super far away. Isn't there one way closer?
There is places way closer, but this was just a really good fit in terms of where I wanted to take my career. A great location that's got a lot of history behind it. Awesome.
Is it a chain or is it a family business?
It's a family business.
Okay.
There is very few big chains in the nursery kind of business. Yeah. I mean, it's the vast majority of it is family owned, which is a pretty big rarity. But there is no in Canada, there's no, or in even the United States, I think for that matter, there's no like coast to coast retailer that specializes in plants. Like you might have, you know, your Home Depot, which will, you know, in the spring, they'll get some plants in and all that kind of stuff. Or your Walmart through that too. But there is no like big chain that is just plants. It's just a really hard niche to fill.
Because the one thing I had in mind was Terra, but I guess that.
Terra's just, it's just this. Like, so there's only like 4 or 5 stores.
True. Really? That's weird.
It is probably one of the bigger ones I've seen. It used to be a family business. Now it's a lot more corporate. They have one big place that will grow a lot of their annuals, and then they get their perennials in from other places. They won't grow most of them themselves, which is honestly to say, like, very few places will grow all of their things. They'll always buy some stuff in, whether it be the annuals, the perennials, the trees. You just can't do it all yourself. You need a lot of really specialized equipment to make each individual kind of plant. Lots of permits, too. So it's a lot of work to get everything.
Yeah, but I guess the permit thing is good, because that's the same with a household if you want to remove a tree. I just remember that back when I was working at Davey Trees. You can't remove more than two, and you have to get the permit both times for each individual tree. Because it's important, right? I can imagine certain countries don't really care about that kind of thing, but
maybe in today's age. The vast majority of countries are very stingy when it comes to plants. I wouldn't say it's that. It's you have your places in Peru or wherever that are growing these annuals, because a lot of the time you do ship them in from places very far away, and they have very strict guidelines. Canada, both Canada and Peru, will have very strict guidelines for the kinds of plants that can come in, the diseases that are within tolerable ranges, because it's totally possible to get a very potent disease that can just wipe out entire crops. And that's what a lot of places are really trying to avoid.
So globalization does come with, I guess we always knew that there are dangers with traveling plants or fruit or anything like that, bacteria.
There's dangers, but at the same time, there's much more opportunities for that now. You could never have the kind of garden now that you did back, you could never get the garden back then that we have now.
Yeah, that's true.
In terms of the varieties that you have available to you, the knowledge that you have. And that can be a good and a bad thing, right? Because with the rise of globalization, all these new plants have come to the forefront, and most of them honestly aren't native for the regions that they're going in. And now there's this big push to get mostly native plants in. You see it, the streets just outside. Norway maples were a hugely popular tree to plant 30, 40 years ago. So you see a lot of really nice mature ones. Now, the problem is they're not native and they can Norway. Become invasive. Yeah, Norway maple, obviously.
Yeah, because I was born and raised with that being just what Canada is, because I had them in the front lawn.
Well, yeah, sugar maple has basically the exact same shape of leaf. It just grows a little bit slower. It's not as tolerant to pollution. So it wasn't as good a fit. But now you have a lot of cities and places not allowing you to plant those, or they won't use them in their commercial plantings.
Yeah.
And which is a shame, because the Norway maple has a lot of really good potential. It's a really fast-growing tree. It's got shallow roots, but there's lots of different varieties that you can get that have, some will have brilliant red leaves throughout the summer, which is just something you can't get in any other kind of maple.
Yeah, exactly.
Besides the Japanese maple.
But do Japanese maples grow any more than
The varieties can. Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You have a beautiful one in front of your house that, is only 4 feet high. That's a nice weeping one, a Crimson Queen. But there's some that can get regular Bloodgood can easily get up to 20 feet with enough time. It's never going to grow to be the size of a regular upright maple.
Yeah.
But, no, you can absolutely get big ones. It's just very slow, and they're super easy to kill. They're definitely one thing that people will buy a lot of, if only because theirs die, so they have to replant it. And they have a high mortality rate for the first couple of years, at least, when they're still getting started.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. That's baby turtles. I think it's sea turtles, the ones that are buried. Their eggs are buried in the sand.
Oh, yeah, and it's
what a terrifying ritual.
They'll lay, hundreds of eggs in a single clutch, and then maybe, one or two will actually survive to adulthood. Even making it to water, not a lot do. And then going further in time, it's the amount they'll actually live to be able to propagate themselves is very low. And that's why you see so many maple keys, the little seeds.
Yeah.
Just because the chances of a tree actually growing it's even lower than a sea turtle.
Yeah.
It's
wild, man. Life finds a way. It's just like Jurassic Park. It's crazy how that works. Because, you could say the same about humans, but, we haven't... When was the last time we actually had to fight for survival as far as cataclysmic nature go? Like, the Black Plague? But even then, there were still humans in Africa and Asia that weren't experiencing that disaster of just extreme mortality.
It is an interesting question to ask, with better science and better medicine, people with conditions that would have perished well before they were able to reproduce are now able to get to that point where they can reproduce. But at the same time, you have to say, well, science is good enough that, it doesn't really matter anymore.
And especially with CRISPR. That's the ultimate future, right? It doesn't matter if you have recessive genes. You can do gene editing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your child
that's a whole other can of ethic worms to be opened up there.
Yeah, that's true.
But it is definitely an interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah, it's okay. So that is a very interesting subject, and it is something that maybe I would want to hit on a little bit more, but I did have a question for you while we're on the subject of trees. The emerald ash.
Borer.
Borer. Yes. That's right. Things
so that is an insect. It is taking out pretty much all of the ash trees.
I remember advertisements coming up in 2013. It was like a pandemic, but it's not like it went away, right? I mean,
it's still around.
Yeah.
It's basically moving kind of, I think it's moving north, northwest, or is it northeast? I think it's northeast, kind of through southern Canada. It's an insect, so it doesn't move fast. Every winter, it kind of gets pushed back a little bit. But because our winters are usually becoming more and more mild due to changing climate, it's not being pushed back as much as it could be. It's unfortunate. It is possible to give your tree. It's a kind of medicine, basically for the tree that can help stave off. A healthy tree can help promote the ash borer to avoid it.
Yeah.
But it costs a lot of money. It's something you have to do every year. So most people are just, they'll wait till their ash dies. Like there are a few that live, and then they'll just replant it with something else. There's a few varieties of ash that are resistant to it. So it's not like the ash tree is under extinction. There's hundreds of varieties and hundreds of different cultivars.
And are they native to Canada?
The ones that are most resistant, I don't believe so. I'm not too familiar with all the different kinds. One I'm most familiar with is the Russian mountain ash, which has a really nice orange berry on it in the later year. But that's something that we do sell at my work. It's a nice tree. It's got the characteristics of a good ash that people like.
The rugged bark. That's like the one thing that always sticks out in my mind when I think of the ash tree.
Mm-hmm.
Is it's because like oak trees have that too, but it's different, right? The way that it sort of juts. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I don't really know much of anything about bark, but
with the ridges, yeah. There's always going to be insects, and they're not always bad. Getting something like the ash borer is bad because it's an invasive insect that's causing a lot of damage. One thing, I guess, while we're on the subject, we can talk about is the Asian longhorn beetle. So the Asian longhorn beetle is an invasive species. It is not currently found in Canada, which is a really good thing because it would do to maple trees what the ash borer has done to ash trees. It would destroy them.
Yeah.
So there was this whole scare several years ago near the Toronto airport where a little kid found an insect and he was studying it, trying to find out what it was, and he found it was an emerald ash borer. So there's a huge panic. They scoured the entire area around it. They found, I think it was one or two more. They eradicated them. And there's been no further sightings, but it's all about, making sure that it doesn't get in. And if it does, that we very quickly and swiftly take care of the problem. Because as soon as it gets out of control, like the ash borer, there's nothing you can do. You can mitigate it, but it's just, it just sweeps through and will tear apart the ecosystem.
Yeah. Cause there's nothing there is nothing like the smaller.
There's no natural predators. They have abundance of food.
Yeah.
It's like not every species that is introduced to an environment will become an invasive species. Very few of them will. If you choose the cactus to the Arctic, it's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
But the ones that do, you just have to be really careful of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and the whole idea of like the airport, cause like obviously airplanes have completely revolutionized the way that business is done and just public relations and people traveling the world. So it's a very good thing, but it's like the internet. There's always the dark side of it.
Yeah.
Airplanes are what brought Toronto SARS back in 2008. That was terrifying. I don't know why I remember that so specifically compared to, I'm sure, many other things that have happened, but it's, I don't know. I mean, I don't fly that often. Maybe if I did, I'd be more comfortable with it, but.
Well, I'd say airports are definitely one vector of entry, but the one you see more, especially for invasive insects, is ports.
Oh, it is both.
It's a lot of shipping pallets. Those can contain a whole nasty of good. I think that's how the emerald ash borer got in.
Okay.
Dutch elm disease. Actually, I think that was something else. No. I think Dutch elm disease, which took out a lot of the elm trees a while ago. Like, geez, it's almost 100 years ago now, I think. That was definitely brought in by something shipping wooden shipping pallets that insects kind of hide in, and they get out and spread the disease.
Yeah.
So it's like going back to your point of globalization, like it's a cause, but there's a lot of benefits, but at the same time, you can prevent a lot of these things with good vigilance.
Yeah. It just takes a lot of logistics. Like you have to think of it's like when we were doing because we're Canadian, but when the space race was happening, it's like it had never been done before. So you had to think of everything that could happen before it happens. It's like the idea of that is just boggling, right? Mm-hmm. Like you had to just have all the smartest minds together to even try and conceive how could we stop something from happening. It's like, what are we stopping? So I guess everyone asked for it, we didn't see coming, but I'm sure now we have preventative measures.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of preventative measures with what can come in, come out. And again, that goes back to the point of like different greenhouses of different countries and like the very strict regulations. I had another job where we were shipping blueberry plants to the United States. And because of a certain disease, none of the blueberry plants were allowed to have leaves on them. So we had to ship them at a specific time of the year where the leaves hadn't come out yet.
Yeah.
Because the disease could persist on old dead leaves. So yeah, plants have a lot more regulations than you might think.
More than people? Probably.
It's hard to say. Yeah. It's the United States now, who knows? But every country's just trying to be careful and making sure that... because there's a lot of pressure on like the agricultural industry. If something gets out, some kind of disease or pest, really infects an industry like that, it can cause a lot of damage.
Because that's a big thing in airports. You're not allowed to bring fruit, your carry-on. People will still do it, but they'll put it like, they'll hide it.
Yeah.
But the big thing is you can't do that. That's you can actually do jail time if you are bringing
fruit. If you're caught smuggling fruits, yeah.
Yeah. Even if you're smuggling just for yourself, it's like, that is so potentially dangerous. In the
airport. Yeah, no, it's because of like potential diseases.
Contagious. It's not so. Mm-hmm. But anyway, let's spin things around a little bit.
Okay.
What would you say is your favorite tree? Do you have one?
I go back and forth on this a lot. There's a lot of really nice trees out there. I would say it can be more tree form. Probably one of my favorite things is the hydrangea. So that's usually just found in, a garden. It's just a general small shrubby thing. You can train it to kind of be more tree-like, though. It doesn't ever reach, huge heights. But I've seen really nice bushes that kind of top out around like 10, 12 feet, and they're beautiful. I know you've seen the hydrangea flower before. You might not remember the name. It's just really nice. It's got all these clusters of flowers on these big flower heads. The flowers will last into the winter, and like there'll be those dried kind of brown pom-pom balls that you'll see.
Then I know exactly what it is. Yeah. Gorgeous flowers.
Gorgeous flowers. Yeah. The blue ones are very popular for Easter. It's just what my favorite plant for sure, because of how nice it looks. It's generally really easy to take care of. There's several different varieties, which all, have their own unique, what color they like. Varieties. Well, yeah, like how the textures, colors, some will be nice and white. Some can be that nice blue or pink. So there's lots of different varieties. So if someone wants, hydrangea flower, you have lots of choices to choose from. You can get small ones, you can get big ones. But I guess going back to the original, tree is probably my favorite. I gotta say it's the red maple. Nice. It's native to Canada.
Is that what the flag is, or is that
a sugar maple, I believe. A red maples usually only have three big lobes, or a sugar maple has five.
Which is that
Canada leaf basically. But red maples, they can have five lobes, but it's genetic variability. It's usually three big lobes. It's the best looking tree in the fall. Despite it saying the red maple, it can be yellow, orange, or red. It's usually a nice red. There's lots of different varieties and cultivars that guarantee a nice red color. It's fast growing. It can grow in really bad conditions. So, really wet spots, it can tolerate really well. It's got a really nice oval form. It's just a great tree all around. There's no big problems. It doesn't sucker. It doesn't tear up your pavement too bad. Well, the straight species can, but you get a nice cultivar and it's usually pretty fine.
That's awesome. Well, that's dope. Yeah, you got so many facts behind your favorite tree. That's probably what makes that the better opinion. But my opinion, I gotta say, it's
right,
the Metasequoia Glyptostrobontes. Yeah, that's right. Don Redwood, baby.
Yep.
Woo! Still got some red
thing.
That
is a non-native, but it can grow here.
Yeah.
It's a really cool tree.
I love the fact that it looks like a carnivorous, but it's a deciduous, like the leaves fall in the summer, in the fall.
Yes,
have that
so it is, it is deciduous, so the leaves do fall off. They turn brilliant gold most of the time before they do, so it's really nice.
Like soft.
But it is a, what's the word? Gymnosperm. So it actually is cone bearing and not the seed bearing.
Yeah.
So it is very similar to like the pines and whatnot in terms of like its genetics, and that it has those cones. But it does lose its leaves.
It's
not
sometimes green instead of
yeah. a very similar one to that is the larch, Larix larcina. That is the western larch, I believe. There's a couple different larches. That one is native to Canada, and it's much more tolerant to cold conditions.
Okay.
The Don Redwood can't really take really cold conditions.
It would usually kill it, like -40 or something?
Yeah, that would usually kill it. It's usually, everything I've seen and read about it says it's best in not past zone 5, and we're about zone 5. But the larch can go all the way up to zone 2. So the Don Redwood is in the western part of North America, I believe. So that kind of explains it. It's more used to a more temperate environment, whereas the eastern larch, I think it's Larix larcina and Larix decidua. Anyway.
But is that also North American?
It's North American.
Okay.
There is a... I think there is a European larch. There's a lot of different plants that can look very similar and have very similar names, especially when you go into the Latin.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of similar to animals, too.
Birds. Exactly like
to
that.
To me, I look at birds, and it's like when you start looking at all the different types, because obviously there's thousands, of, like innumerable for all we know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because we just haven't found them all yet. But they could look so similar. And then
And sometimes, you know, like you can't even tell the difference between them. Thankfully, plants have, I find, a little bit more variability. It's a little bit easier if you know what you're looking for to tell the differences between them. But even then, like, it can be tough because, like I said, genetic variability is huge, and it can easily change how something looks. So and nothing's cookie cutter in the forest. So you always have to go in and pay attention to the buds, the leaves, the branches, the stems. There's lots to look at, which is fun.
Yeah. So if the audience hasn't guessed by now, it's safe to say that you've actually... gotten an education, a formal education in, what would you call it? Arboriculture or did you go to school for something?
Yeah.
As a report.
It was, what is it now? Greenhouse management.
Okay.
So it encompasses all of the, plants basically. So I learned all about plants as well as, you know, the ups and downs of greenhouses and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, there is some education there. So I know a little bit more, but I'm always looking to, you know, learn more, and working in the industry definitely helps. So you're just around those kind of things. So you pick up a lot more. It's one thing to learn something in a classroom, and it's another to actually be out there and learning about it.
The never ending learning is usually the best way to do it, right?
Life, the best teacher.
Exactly. And would you say that this is something that you'd maybe want to do for the rest of your life? Do you think this subject is something you'd want to specialize in?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of things that I'm interested in right now in life. But this is something that I feel I'm good at. I like talking to people about it.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm here.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for anybody who wants to, would you want to give away the store name just as a free plug? Or
leave
it a mystery.
Surprise, yeah.
Yeah. Plus, you're always going to get business, right? It's the same thing as shoes. Nobody's going to say, yeah, no more of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's never ending. Okay, so to get more onto the subject we were talking about earlier, I don't know why I'm blanking on it right now. What was it about? It wasn't about contagions with people. We were talking about future technologies, like with CRISPR. Have you thought a lot about the future of technology? Not specifically in medicine or in nanotech, but...
just technology in general?
Yeah, like what would you say your opinion of the future is? Have you thought a lot about it?
It's kind of scary in one way. I mean, it's definitely going to be replacing a lot of jobs. I can't say if it would eventually be my own. Hope not. But you can definitely see the wheels kind of turning with, like, jobs that are on the decline and jobs, you know, that are going to be...
are going to be gone. Like,
yeah.
You can see where the path is heading. Like, with my job, I currently drive for a living. That's soon going to be out of the market. Like, or maybe I'll be the assistant to the AI or something.
So one thing that I very strongly agree with is that as technology kind of pushes people out, that the governments kind of step in and they have to
implement some sort of
something. Yeah, there has to be some kind of universal system to basically help people like that. Because eventually we're going to get to the point where, and I firmly believe this, that there's just not going to be enough work for people. We're going to have to, like, there's going to be some people that are making so much money that you have to do something to kind of, I'm not trying to be all communist and say divvy it up, but there just has to be some way that
humanity can live in general.
If they're making all this money because they laid off their entire workforce because some new technology was invented, that should be in some way taxed or subsidized going towards people that were laid off.
I feel like it's already happened in a lot of ways. Like with simple things, like in fast food, how you can order online. So now it'll be a slow process where it's like we need less cashiers to, like, now we need one or two kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be very slow burn, the loss of jobs. It's going to be so slow. It's like the boiling water sort of way of thinking about it, where if you, which is a real thing, which is also super scary just for frogs. It's like, you know, sucks to be you, but if you put them in a regular room temperature glass of water and then slowly raise the temperature, they'll just die because they won't realize.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it won't process in, like, their senses. And I feel like that's what's going to happen to us, even though obviously people are talking about it. So it is in the public mental domain. I still feel like there's going to be the naysayers and, you know, people will still be assured that there'll be jobs and it'll just be such a slow burn that, like, it'll cause riots or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one aspect of the technology. But then there's also better aspects of technology. Like, do you think there's a potential, and this obviously would be way in the future, but some sort of advanced version of VR where instead of putting on goggles, you actually, like, matrix it?
Yep, the whole the mind helmet kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, who knows what that's going to look like at some point. That's been huge in, like, popular fiction recently.
Yeah.
In TV and books and everything. Like, that's definitely something everyone likes to talk about. The whole trapped in a video game thing.
Just getting jacked in and then, you know.
Yeah, and then you're stuck and you got to beat the game to get out, but people die if they die in the game. You die for real,
yeah.
Yeah. it's really hard to say. Like, VR was hyped to be this huge thing, and in a way it was, but at the same time it wasn't accessible to people, which is a huge thing. I wouldn't say movements, but, like, advancements made to kind of make it more open. Sony put VR on their PlayStation console, which definitely reached a much larger market, but it's still a huge investment. You need a good computer to actually be able to run these things, which the vast majority of people don't have. And my computer, which I built myself, isn't even powerful enough for that.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to say at this point. It would be cool. It would be great. But just I'm thinking, like, from a development standpoint, just making a game in today's with today's standards in mind is just a massive undertaking. It's so much work.
It's not the same as in the 80s and 90s.
No, where you could have, like, you know, one guy making a game and it'd take him maybe like a year. He'd have this great game and everyone love it and sell hundreds of thousands of copies and he'd make a profit. Now you have these huge studios.
It has to be the best of the best.
Yeah. And, you know, and maybe I think, I feel a lot of that is tied up in with the graphics of the game. Like, there's such a demand now to have these beautiful, beautiful graphics that I feel
realistic.
That, and that I feel if we kind of pulled back from that a bit, we could open ourselves up to a lot more. And I kind of see VR doing that. VR chat. Did you hear about that game? That if you haven't heard about it, you've probably seen videos of it.
I'm gonna think I've seen it. Is that where that?
It's like a big chat room, and you can dress up as your own avatar and do crazy things. The Ugandan Knuckles meme.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's
a VR
from.
Chat meme. So if you look at that game doesn't have beautiful graphics. It, you know, it's basically a lot of user content. Yeah. So, you know, if you have something like that, then maybe it's possible. But even then, there's huge things. There's like things like haptic feedback that you have to worry about. But again, when you say if it's plugging into your mind, maybe that's not going to be such an issue. But just going back to the thing of development, I think that's just absolutely murder on the developers. It's been basically almost exponential with how much more effort it takes to actually push out a game nowadays.
And compared to the attention that it actually holds. It's like it holds less attention. It takes a million times more work.
Yeah, the amount of hours that you have to pour in. But then again, it's hard to say, you know, because like you just enjoy the game that this company spends, like, you know, literally thousands of hours of man hours, like hundreds of thousands even, on developing. You enjoy it for, you know, maybe your 10 to 40 hours. But then again, you know, if it sells a million copies, that's a million people that are also enjoying it the same way. So, you know,
just times their hours together.
Yeah, that's a lot of hours.
Because I think they say that about the amount of hours watched on YouTube collectively is like 300 times longer than the universe has been around. It's like, geez. Yeah. So it's a good thing that, you know, that's not how time works, that, you know, everything's happening all together at the same time. But To further the point, if we're actually jacking it into our skulls, in that one scene of Inception, they're sort of talking about that, where it's like the details don't matter because, like, when you're in a dream, your brain like fills in the blanks, so it doesn't really matter because your focus isn't all that much on it. It's not the same as looking at a screen because you're obviously conscious and like it's a different experience. So maybe dream gaming would be something in the future. I have no idea.
Maybe potentially, or just dreaming. Enhance your dreams with this virtual
plug
reality.
It in.
Yeah,
while you
maybe
dream,
that's
and then
something.
You can like lucid dream and do whatever you want.
Because there's no way to say how programming it would actually work. Yeah. I know there's been like things where people have been able to like use thoughts with their minds plugged in or something, and have
that
show up
on
a screen or something.
I think I saw that on TED Talk, yeah.
So, you know, that things are moving in that direction.
But
and, you know, technology tends to move fast, but it's starting slow.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
And then I was going to say something else about the Uganda Knuckles. In Uganda, there is a picture taken of someone who spray painted the Uganda Knuckles on the wall. And they're like, you finally found the way. The meme is dead. It's over. It's good. There was a happy ending.
It was the kind of meme that burns very fast because it burns so bright.
Yeah, that's how it works, yeah. The candle that burns, you know, two times
twice
as bright.
As fast. Yeah, burns, yeah.
Yeah, well. So, R.I.P. Uganda Knuckles. No, so how did that even start? Maybe, I don't know.
It was in VR
was
chat. It had to have been someone that, you know, thought this was a really funny joke. And there have been a ton of things like that on VR chat that haven't seen anywhere near the coverage, basically, that Uganda Knuckles did. It was very memeable. It was really easy to digest, so it just took off.
That's how it works,
yeah.
What's the most recent one? Surprise Pikachu, or is there one I'm missing?
Surprise Pikachu is definitely a recent one. I'm sure there's more. I should keep up on them more, but no.
Because, that's the funny thing. They're saying, and I probably read this years ago, and it's like, you guys, we've made memes so big that it's literally has to be written down in history now. It's like we've created this, like, it's so dumb to think about because you're like, it's just jokes on the internet. It's just pictures that have templates that you can use over and over again. And it's like, it will literally be written down in history 100 years from now. They're going to talk about all the different memes and stuff. There's going to be meme historians. It's insane to think about.
It's kind of weird, you know, just thinking about that going forward, but then you kind of look back. And memes have honestly existed for a much longer time than I think most people realize. They just weren't in the same, you know, context. They were inside jokes that kind of expanded. They were, you saw them in comedy shows and things like that. Just like very relatable things that people can, you know, laugh at or laugh with.
Yeah. Or just like, you could say anything that ends in ER, where you just say like, you know, paper, I barely know her. Like, you just say anything. It's like, that became a huge meme. And plus, the definition of memes as well.
Mm-hmm.
Memes are just things that are replicated by definition. So internet meme should be, you know, if you want to be specific, it's an internet meme. Actual memes are glasses and cars and anything that's just been replicated. But nobody knows.
Replicated with culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Surprise Pikachu is a big one.
Yeah.
There's a lot that can kind of come up at the same time, it seems. SpongeBob has...
Oh, he's got it.
He
forever,
has,
infinite. I think right now, him as Sylvester Stallone is really big, where someone freeze framed him like half blinking and he's got like pucker lips and he looks just like Sylvester Stallone. It's the funniest thing ever. How people are using that for stuff, but man, SpongeBob.
Hard to describe a meme too, like the context that makes it funny. SpongeBob's really easy because the show's hilarious and like the things that can happen in the show, apply to so many other things. Yeah. Like you can have, you know, that Sylvester Stallone joke, and just apply it to a bunch of other different things, and it's hilarious.
That's me for you. Anyway, so aside from memes, loving trees, we have some other things in common, like video games and anime. I feel like I haven't talked about either of those two things ever on this podcast, so
it's fresh
conversation. Yeah. So as far as video games go, I hope I don't lose any audience members over this, but the Switch has got to be, like, I guess to each their own, right? But it seems like the most popular video game is still Fortnite, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Because
it's so accessible
every
console, even on the Switch.
Mm-hmm. Fortnite, I think, is at, or just past, its peak of a popularity. And I remember seeing this with Minecraft, too. It takes off in a hugely cultural way, but then something comes up and eclipses it. And that doesn't mean that Fortnite's going to suddenly fail. It's not going to make any less money than it is right now, because it's making a ridiculous
Billions of dollars. Amount of money.
Oh. Yeah, it was just...
For a free game.
Mm-hmm. It was just banned in China, actually. So maybe it'll make a little less money now.
Why was it banned in China? That's crazy. They just don't like that people are spending so much time on it? Or what was the thing there?
Video games in China are a really tough topic. Censorship comes up a lot. It's not a very free country. Yeah. So the thoughts and ideas that they want to express in the video games, because they have so much control over their internet there, they want them, you know, to be promotion of the country and its ideals. What that means is kind of left up to the interpretation of every individual person, but the reality is that a lot of games will get censored. They want less blood. They want less gore. World of Warcraft ran into that issue with a lot. They replaced their zombies with just very pale people.
That's weird. But whatever works, right? You want to get Chinese zombies.
Yeah, but getting back to Fortnite... and its popularity, I feel like there's soon, within the next couple months, we'll see something else start to really take off. And it's not something you really, like, notice at first. No one, like, immediately hails it as the next big thing, but it just gains a lot of momentum like Fortnite did. Yeah, and then it'll just, like,
and
shoot
then Drake
up.
Will play it, and then boom.
and I honestly don't even think it'll be a Battle Royale game, because that's what Fortnite is, a Battle Royale video game where everyone, basically, you'll have 100 people start, and at the end, there's usually only one winner. And it's Fortnite itself is a really interesting mix, because for a while, the most popular video games were Call of Duty and then Minecraft. And Fortnite kind of mashes those two together in a really, I guess, aesthetically pleasing way. So you have the building of Minecraft, where you disassemble components, and then you can make your own little fort, which helps you then shoot people to become the number one Battle Royale winner.
Yeah.
It's definitely caught on with the younger audience, which both those games, Minecraft and Call of Duty, were very popular with as well.
Also, okay, that's I gotta pin something there. Minecraft, to any parent who's watching this and their kid plays Minecraft, I urge you to give them anything else to play, because they did a recent poll and Minecraft is like, you know, I don't know how accurate this fact check thing is, but Minecraft is majority pedophiles who play it, who are trying to fish kids. In today's world, it's not having vans that say, I want candy. It's literally pedos.
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. Like, online.
It's scary. Like, I just learned about that. It's like, it's a fishing mechanism. It's the same as the van with candy, but today's kids are inside playing video games.
At the same time, I would also warn against not trying to overemphasize the dangers of Minecraft.
Yeah, obviously,
at its
heart, just go
the game itself is fine. It's a safe game. I'd say it's even has the potential to be educational, depending on the context.
It's like Lego, but in a virtual world.
Yeah, it's virtual Lego, which is it encourages creativity. It's great. Yeah. What you have to be careful with, and this is something to talk to your kids, I guess, with any video game, is the kind of people they meet online. If they're just playing with their friends and they, you know, their real life friends, they know these people, then that's fine. That's great. But if they want to join in any one of these other various lobbies, it's, you know, it definitely helps to have a talk with your kids about making sure they don't believe everyone is who they say they are on the internet. It's okay to talk to people, but you just want to be mindful of what information you're giving. And just be aware that that's something that can happen.
And I just recently learned this term, but have you ever heard of grieving?
As like griefing?
Or griefing, yeah.
Yes.
I can't believe that's a real thing.
That's been around forever. As long as multiplayer video games have been a thing, griefing is the act of intentionally playing a game in such a way that it's disruptive to others. So in Minecraft, if your kid or you build this beautiful house or castle, a griefer would come and pour lava all over it.
It would destroy the fun. Just trolls. They're trolls, except like more evil, because like they actually...
it's the whole bully thing, right? Like someone wants to feel powerful. They want to get a rise. They want to get a laugh. So they will grief this other person. Young kids are often prime targets because they tend to overreact. They don't want this to happen. They react strongly, which is what the griefer wants. The griefer then, oh, I had so much fun, you know, ruining this kid's day.
Yeah, exactly. That's so, like, I shouldn't be laughing at it because it's so mean, but it's like, that's just so weird because, like, I never even knew that was a thing. But it's like, I'm sure because I played Halo 3 like it was a religion. That was like my video game when you think of video games. And I played that so much, and I'm sure at points I was being griefed without realizing because people would just, like, target me out of an entire group and, like, leave the other teammates or something in an online match.
Yeah, or you'd have something like a teammate somehow killing you, removing the floor out from under you, anything that's kind of, like, intentionally.
Just, you can tell they're shitting around. Like, it's not actually, you know. Yeah, it's not so. It's just wild. Like, I just learned about that. But
yeah. And I mean, like, it goes back to the thing, like, before video games, like, you know, essentially there still was griefing. You know, someone knocking over your snow castle was, you know, could be considered griefing in the physical sense. So it's definitely something you want to discourage your kid from doing because, you know, no one wants a kid to be an asshole like that.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just something that's going to happen as long as, like,
the it's a thing that exists.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the more you know, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild. Anyway. So that's that. What video games are you playing currently?
Currently, this is probably a lot of people are talking about this. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate came out last week.
Hell yeah.
That is the biggest game. It's basically just a collection of all the fighters, and you basically fight it out. The amount of content in the game is frankly insane. There is over 50 different fighters from varying franchises, some of which the creator of the game, Nintendo, do not even own. It's third party. So you've got people like Pac-Man, Sonic the Hedgehog,
Snake.
Like, Solid Snake. Yeah, that's
like
crazy.
How do you get those guys?
Cloud from Final Fantasy. It's a huge collaboration between different studios and different companies. It's a letter of love to the fans for, you know, all these games. It's just a huge game. The series goes way back, all the way pre-2000. Super Smash Bros. On the N64 the year, 1990?
It's 6 or 7, because it wasn't before then, but it definitely wasn't after. You can tell it's like polygon graphics.
Yeah. It's a very big series. So that's basically what I've been putting most of my
time into. Well, same here. I've been obsessed with it. It's like... it's just specifically not hanging out with my girlfriend so I can play this game. It's terrible, but I figure, you know, I'm young and I can get away with it. And plus, I missed the last game in the last console. So for me, the last time I played was a decade ago.
But yeah, thankfully, this one does have pretty much all the content that was in that game, all the fighters at least.
Yeah, the locations, all the, like, they have Young Link from Melee. Like, that blew my mind.
When they said they were bringing back everyone, they brought back everyone.
It, it's awesome. It's pretty good. Yeah,
so that's what I've been playing the most. Looking into the future, though, what's coming out next month that's going to be really big, Kingdom Hearts 3. Have you heard about this series?
Of course. Well, I never played any of them, but I remember watching you play Kingdom Hearts 2. And that game is, like, It's a con- like it are the anime-esque characters actually based off something, or are they original characters for the game?
So it's a huge, horrible mishmash. The story is the most convoluted, awful thing I have ever seen, but I just can't get enough of it. So it's a video game. It is co-developed by Square Enix and Disney. That is, you know, the juggernaut Disney.
Yeah.
So basically, it features some anime-inspired characters, which is, you know, Japanese animation. And lots and lots of Disney characters.
Yeah.
So,
and like,
the whole premise is that there's all these different worlds and they're all, you know, separated, and then something brings them together. And there's this horrible darkness on the rise, and you have to stop it with your friends, Donald and Goofy. You go out and you fight the forces of darkness, and it's fantastic. So you go through all these Disney worlds. You'll usually have this, like, you'll basically go through the plot of the movie. So when you go to the Aladdin world, you start at Aladdin. He's this, you know, scrappy young lad, and he goes into the Cave of Wonders, gets Genie, everything's great, has to defeat Jafar in the end, all the yada yada. And then, you know, as you go through all these different worlds, there's this whole overarching kind of thing where you're looking for your friends who have gone missing from your island. So it's a very hard to explain kind of whole story thing, but the basic premise is pretty simple. Forces of darkness bad, forces of light good, defeat the forces of darkness. But, you know, the really interesting thing is that it uses these Disney properties. Disney is known for being very tightly gripping,
very controlling
of their IPs, intellectual properties.
And not even their IPs, they're controlling other people's IPs.
Yes, which they now own because of all these copyright shenanigans.
Yeah.
So it's just a really fun game. The gameplay is basically you run around these different worlds. You have this, it's a sword shaped like a key, the keyblade, which is, you know, a hugely iconic weapon in video games now. And you just basically go around. The original characters are kind of a mix. So you have some that are from the Final Fantasy series, so that's Square Enix. So they're bringing some of their characters in. But a lot of them now are original characters that are just made for Kingdom Hearts. So it is kind of this big whole mix of different things. But going back to the game, so the original one released on the PS2, I want to say somewhere like 2001, 2002.
Okay, so yeah.
So it's old, like we're going way past 15 years now. The second one released in 2004-ish.
So it was like a direct sequel.
It was a direct sequel.
All right, and then just...
And then, you know, you have this huge thing where now it's like 13 years later, and now we're getting the third one. But that's simplifying it a little bit. So there have been many Kingdom Hearts games in between, but none of them were a full-fledged Kingdom Hearts 3. So they were all side stories, or they were focusing on, like, things that happened before the events of the main story, things that happened in between the main stories. And they have... I wouldn't say convoluted the plot, but they've definitely added a whole lot more into it. So it's really, if you were to say, like, to go from Kingdom Hearts 2 to Kingdom Hearts 2, you would not understand anything. It's like Game of Thrones. If you read the first book, you read the second book, and then you skip all the way to the fifth book. You're like, what just happened? I don't know who this character is. Why is this character important? Why are these characters over here?
It's like Avengers. Imagine, because some people actually do this. They just watch Avengers movies.
Yeah.
And they don't watch any of the movies in between. So it's like they're constantly going, who's that? What's going on?
Yeah, what?
It's like they're not direct sequels. There are all these in-between stuff.
Yeah. So this prevents an interesting challenge for Square Enix, who's making and, you know, selling the game.
Yeah.
That you have this huge game. Like, this game is big. It's been in development for a long time. It's like we're going back to you before. It's costing a lot of money to make this game.
Yeah.
And they have to sell a lot of copies. But I'd say a lot of people just, they haven't played these games before. You're advertising to a new audience. So what they've done is they've actually remastered all the old games and stuck them on one disc and then sent them out.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is that is only on the PlayStation 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. So, if you're unaware, PlayStation is a brand by Sony. Another big competitor in the scene is Microsoft, who makes the Xbox consoles. Now the thing is, Kingdom Hearts 3 is being released on the PS4, PlayStation 4, and the Xbox One.
So it's being released on the Xbox.
It's being released on the Xbox.
But they're not...
to an audience that potentially has no idea what's going on. They've never played these games before, and they can't play them because the remasters of all the old games aren't on their console. So there will presumably be some kind of
There's going to be a little confusion.
There's
going to
be a little bit of confusion, yeah. But I've already seen trailers for it that have been like on regular TVs in Best Buy the other day. That was interesting. So, you know, they're gearing up. Comes out January 29th.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that's coming up. That's pretty big.
Yeah.
How about you? You've got anything?
For me, it's just Smash.
Just
the next thing I'd be waiting for is like a new Star Fox game, or I don't know if they'd be doing a new Metroid game, because I know after Metroid Prime 3,
Been announced, actually. Metroid Prime 4, yes.
Oh, so 4 is coming.
Yes.
Oh, gosh,
that's another thing. So 2 years ago now, Nintendo announced Metroid Prime 4. Actually, I guess it was not quite 2 years, more than one. Anyway, they announced that their big E3 press conference. It was just a logo, Metroid Prime 4. and that's been about it. That's all
awesome.
We've literally heard. So it's been over a year now.
Yeah.
It's presumably still being made. I believe it's being made by Bandai Namco. So
it is going to be on.
Yes. So the previous 1, 2, 3 Metroid Prime games, they were made by Retro Studios.
Yeah. And they had, like, everything about it was amazing. The style of it and, like, the story and everything. Like, the story was simplistic, but just the tone of the games I loved for whatever reason.
Especially the first one. It had a very isolated tone, which is to the heart of Metroid. And to anyone who doesn't know, Metroid is a video game series that has a lot in common with the Aliens franchise by
Ridley Scott,
yes. It's, you know, very isolated. There's horrifying aliens, and you gotta kill the aliens.
Yeah, and a lot of mystery, too.
Yes.
The puzzles that you have to solve and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very focused on exploration, too, which is a really nice aspect of these games. There's always things to find. Metroid Prime 4 eventually coming out. Hopefully we'll hear some more news on that sometime in the future. But for now, it's
just a symbol.
Still hoping, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we're 8.5 minutes left into this episode. So I'm going to rapid fire some questions at you and see what I go for. So first, I'm going to get into the opinion section. But before that, and I guess this is an opinion question, but what is your favorite anime? Can you pin it down? Like movie, not TV show.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's hard to say there's a lot, but JoJo's Bizarre Adventure just encompasses so much. It's such a huge series that there's just always something to love in it.
It's not bad. What about, not specifically Studio Ghibli, but anything that Disney curated? Is there anything in that field that you partake to? Or is JoJo part of that?
Well, I mean, if you're saying if just a movie, like an animated movie?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go back a little bit then. Land Before Time.
Land Before Time? Nice. Is that from a Japanese studio?
No.
Okay, so
it was Don Bluth and Steven Spielberg's.
Steven Spielberg!
So it's an old, I think it was even before I was born.
It's
probably
like
about little dinosaurs trying to find their way and a horrific T-Rex that's trying to eat them.
Yeah, so
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure doesn't stand up to it, unfortunately.
For anyone, yeah, because that seems iconic, but you don't really hear people talking about Land Before Time the same way that they do about The Lion King or anything like that.
No, yeah, it's unfortunately just kind of been like, it didn't leave the same impact, I would say.
Yeah.
Also, The Lion King didn't have like 10 sequels, direct to DVD sequels kind of thing.
True.
So I'm sure that
may or may not have played
maybe a mark against Land Before Time in terms of its quality. But
yeah, what are you gonna do? I wonder how long that had been going on. Maybe that was one of the first times where if something was successful and it was animated, they go, let's just pump out like 20 of these things.
Disney was guilty of doing that themselves.
Well, yeah, with Cinderella, and I think there was like a second one.
I did hear the third Cinderella was actually legitimately good though. So
okay.
I gotta verify that at some point. But yeah, you saw this like it was a weird era for Disney where they were just like it was really lowering the quality of their intellectual properties a lot. But
some would argue they're doing that now.
Yeah,
it's live action
thing,
but
but that's a whole other can of worms that we can talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so on to the official opinion section. I will start by asking you. So obviously, there's tons. Like, I'll run through a list of the ones I won't ask you, but like that are obvious ones. Like, what's your opinion on abortion, tattoos, space travel, the environment? Like, there's a lot of ones like that where I keep getting the same answers.
So mix it up a little. Give me something,
exactly.
Something different.
So I do have new ones here.
Oh, boy.
If you're ready.
I'm ready.
What is your opinion on Ouija boards?
Total garbage.
Total garbage. Have you ever used one before?
I have not.
But not worth it.
Not even worth considering.
I did one when I was in grade 4. I really hope my grandma's listening to this. But it seemed spooky, seemed like it was real, but obviously that's probably because the friend who I was with was...
Even if you're not meaning to it, you're still slightly moving.
The laws of physics still apply. There isn't some sort of magical... Okay, so that's another one. What is your opinion on spirituality in general?
I mean, it's good to have your own thoughts and ideas about what you believe in.
Yeah.
I have nothing against people that strongly believe in something. It's stepping back and not infringing on other people's...
Human rights.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that's where you got to say no.
This is where it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Because that's so weird that it even went that way. Because so just to pick on some religions here, but it's like with Mr. Jesus, he was apparently in the same realm as Buddha when it came to meditation and stuff. He just did it in his own way. So he was very Zen. He was very peaceful. That was the thing that he was trying to sell to people. He's go with peace. Blessed are the meek, all that kind of stuff, right? And yet, today's world, we have people who are very proud Christians who are let's kill homosexuals, even though they don't explicitly say anywhere in there that it's, bad. I think in the Bible it says you can't lay with another man, but what does that mean? Was that slang for something? Who knows what they're talking about? That just means you can't go to sleep the next to another guy. Who knows?
Yeah, it's just taking those ideas too far.
Just radicalizing it. It's complete insanity. But anyway, obviously there's good, community and charity. But then there's just all of the bad stuff. It's insane. But okay, on to the next one. What is your opinion on gambling?
It's something people are going to do, whether you stop it or not. So you might as well just tax it.
Make money.
Try to keep it relatively in control. Have channels open for people that have gambling problems. Like gambling addiction is a totally real thing.
But you don't.
But I personally, generally, no. I don't even think I've ever bought a scratch ticket. I just, the odds are so stacked against you. I've gambled in video games, man. The odds don't even turn out there. I'm not even losing anything, so.
I've bought tons of scratch tickets, and I've gone to casinos and stuff, but never because I wanted to. I always just do it in social situations.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll buy one.
Yeah,
it's
not
because I believe.
Yeah, set a limit for yourself and just, have some fun. Maybe you'll make some money. Hey, that's great. Try to make money with it.
Yeah, don't actually believe.
Making money should not be the goal. It should be an unintended side effect.
Yeah. And so it is. So on to the next one here. What is your opinion on furries?
Sexuality is a thing that you have to be very respectful of.
Is there any argument that it might not be sexual, or is it definitely 100% just a sexual thing?
100%. At least in some way rooted in sexuality.
Yeah.
That person identifies or strongly feels about...
It's a cartoon animal.
It's not even a cartoon animal with some people.
It's just the role-playing taken to the next level.
Yeah, the role-playing, and it's...
There's furry cons.
100% not for me.
Yeah.
I'm totally fine with other people doing it. And it goes back to the thing, we respect people. If you're walking down the street and you see someone with one of those furry tails, I don't say anything. It's just their choice, their opinion. It's not hurting me in any way, so I'm not going to go out of my way to be mean to them or anything.
Yeah.
It's just, they say hi to me, I say hi to them, I go about my day.
And that's how you live.
That's how you live.
Kids. On to the next one here. What is your opinion on the death penalty? I mean, since we're not from America, I'm sure, you don't think about it that much because we don't really
have
it.
It's definitely not something that comes up.
Yeah. Do you think it has any place? Do you think there's any merit to someone who is so bad that they shouldn't live anymore? A true monster.
You want to say no, but there are those kinds of people, unfortunately. If that some kind of person just the crime is so heinous that there's just no chance that they would perform, they're either sitting in prison for the rest of life or it's a death penalty. Which one is worse might change depending on who you ask or what kind of specific person. For someone maybe laying around in a prison all day is the best kind of treat basically they can get, or it might be this horrible agony. It's not trying to maximize the amount of suffering on the person.
It's just keeping them away from society.
Yeah, again,
by any means.
Yeah. So there's always a better option, I feel, than the death penalty.
Yeah. So what's a good last one here for you? What is your opinion on, let's go with, what's the perfect one? What is your opinion on mortality?
It's going to happen to everyone, so don't stress about it too much. Just enjoy yourself while you can, and be kind to others, and they'll be kind to you, hopefully.
And just, yeah, everybody have a good day, all that kind of stuff. So in the last few seconds here, are there any parting words of wisdom that you would give to the audience, something to leave them with as they go about their day? Classic live, laugh, love kind of scenario.
Oh, yeah, I've got this one for sure. If you have macrophylle hydrangeas, for the love of God, don't plant them in afternoon sun. They will just be awful and they will not survive well. If it's a mop head hydrangea, if the flowers are blue, you have to plant it in where it's getting afternoon shade. Thank you.
Nice. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.